Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Episode is December 6th, 2023. And we have a very special guest tonight. She is a major content creator who will be guest hosting this special edition. And the subject tonight, folks, is why black athletes should form their own professional sports leagues. Okay, Ms. Sparks, we're turning it over to you, ma'am, and you have the floor.
Wow. Well, thank you first for having me on. So you just want me to jump right in why athletes should have their own sports team? Is that
yes,
what
ma'am.
We mean?
Yes, okay. Ma'am. The black athletes is because, you know, the general public comes to see them, you know, in football, the NBA, Major League Baseball, you know, and boxing as well, too. So, therefore, with the, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
And then also, too, we're making it a special note, and they're welcome to call in if they want, but there's an NFL football team called the Washington Commanders, and one of the high-level management personnel had made the statements, well, if black athletes don't like what we're doing here in the NFL, they need to go to Africa to see how bad it is, and then they should form their own league. So we're calling them out on it.
And they absolutely should. Well, first, NBA players need to stop marrying white women. We can start there.
Yes, ma'am. Most definitely.
Keep our wealth in our community. That's kind of crazy. But no, I absolutely agree. You're right. If everyone pulls together and definitely starts buying these sports teams. And not even just athletes. What about, like, the rappers, Jay-Z?
Okay, there you go. Yes, ma'am, absolutely. You see what
you
I'm
know,
saying?
All these guys, exactly. You know, you have all these guys. Who's that racist guy that owned the NBA team?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do they? So how hard is it to buy these teams anyway? Like, so answer me that because, of course, you know, I watch sports and I love basketball, but I don't know the background of it. Like, you know, I would imagine it's very expensive, but how do you buy a team? Because it's not just you owning it, right?
Right, yes, because you would have to go one. Okay, you would have to go.
I'm sorry.
Okay, is that?
Yes,
yeah,
greetings.
That's Brother Trey.
Brother Trey, co-executive producer of Shoeboxes Black Experience Enhanced and co-host of Greetings, Sparks. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hello, hi, nice to meet you.
Yes, ma'am. And also, too, we do Frontline Black News as well, too, and they do follow us on StreamYard as well. Okay, so what we're saying, Brother Che, you know, and then I'm enlightening, you know, Ms. Sparks on, and you remember that the owner of the Washington Commanders who stated that if the black NFL players don't like the way how they're doing things, they need to go on and form their own leagues?
Yes.
Okay, and if you can enlighten Ms. Sparks on more information on that there, sir, and then we would definitely would like to get her feedback on this.
So her question was, how can we go about buying these leagues? Ms. Sparks, are you familiar with the Big Three that Ice Cube put together for the basketball league?
No. Well, I think the traveling team, was that some years ago? Like, I vaguely remember. Go on. Just explain it.
So, what I was going to say is you got to have partners. You got to have stakeholders.
Right.
Involved in the ownership. So, for instance, my team, which Shabaka can't stand, but I don't care. My team, the Denver Broncos, are part owned by several people. The people of Walmart, Condoleezza Rice. And,
right, I remember that. And what's her name? Isn't there a black woman too? What's her name? She's a financial planner.
Her name escapes me right now. But yes, it's three black people
right.
that are part owners
yeah.
in the Denver Broncos. So it has to be a partnership. So you got to have the money up front. So. A team is not cheap. A team costs billions of dollars depending on where it's at, where it's located, what the fan base looks like, if they're selling out tickets or not. Like, it's a lot that goes into it. But basically, I would say you need several partners that have a lot of money, a lot of capital up front, and they can go in and invest into the team with you. So, like, the Big Three is owned by Ice Cube and an entertainment executive named Jeff Kwasniewski. He's a Jew. And the league consists of 12 teams whose rosters include both former NBA players and international players. Let's see, Ice Cube.
Okay.
He's a millionaire. He's a multimillionaire. So, and the other dude, I'm pretty sure he's a multimillionaire, if not a billionaire. So, it looks like several people have bought teams in that. Snoop Dogg has bought a team. Ken Howie has brought a team. Gary Vaynerchuk, and the gods have all bought teams in the big three. So out of 12 teams, majority of them are black owned.
And then also too, I pulled up some information here. What does it take to be the owner of an NFL franchise? Okay. In the States here, as hobbies go, they aren't many more expensive than owning an NFL team. Of course, for some owners, it's much more than a hobby. Some teams have been in the hands of the same family for decades, purchased many years ago for amounts so paltry that it makes their current value all the more staggering. However, for owners that purchased their teams more recently, such as Jimmy Haslam of the Cleveland Browns, the investment is enormous. That made it all the more surprising last week when the Wall Street Journal reported that Haslam's Pilot Flying J company, which operates gas stations and truck stops across America, has a staggering $4 billion in debt. Okay. How does a guy whose company has $4 billion in debt afford an NFL team? What exactly does it take to own an NFL team? Well, to start with, it takes somewhere between $100 and over $1 billion, depending on when you bought the team, okay? As the chart above demonstrates, if you're one of the NFL's new school owners, such as Haslam, or Stephen Ross of the Miami Dolphins, you're going to be writing an enormous check if you want to own an NFL team. In fact, the $700 million that was the first payment made by Haslam is part of the problem at Pilot Flying J, according to the WSJ, the Wall Street Journal. The company's debt nearly doubled to $4 billion in a two-year period through last year as its owners paid themselves two payments, totaling $1.7 billion from it, according to Moody's. Last year, Pilot issued a $1.1 billion of the debt largely to fund the second one, a dividend for $700 million, according to the S&P. That was partly so Jimmy could buy the Cleveland Browns. These astronomical figures contrast starkly to the amounts paid for the NFL least expensive teams. The Hollis family sold all of $100 to establish, no, the Hollis family paid a total of $100 to establish the Chicago Bears, then the Decatur Stanleys way back in 1920, over 100 years ago. It cost the Myra family $500 to found the New York Giants 5 years later. The Green Bay Packers were founded by the community and have never had a sale price. Granted, $500 was a lot of money in 1925, but it wasn't worth $750 million. Once upon a time, if you were a man with a crazy dream and $25,000, you could be the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs or the Buffalo Bills. Take a look what the aforementioned 10 teams are now worth, according to Forbes magazine, and certainly that dream doesn't appear to be so crazy. The last three teams to be sold have barely broken even, but for those who have owned their clubs for decades, owning an NFL team has been better than winning the lottery. So, in short, as hobbies go, owning an NFL team is a pretty good investment. Very rarely does the value of a team go down. Get a shiny new stadium, and that value can skyrocket. Every team in the NFL will get a nice boost in the bottom when the new TV deals kicks in come 2014. And this is an old article right here, by the way, folks. Nowadays, you have to be filthy rich to buy an NFL team. However, there are a few families in America, such as the Rooneys, and Al Davis's plan in Oakland that became filthy rich by owning an NFL team, which is now the Las Vegas Raiders, you see. So therefore, if we, you know, had proper education for our youth, you see, to aspire to doing this, it's because when it comes to us, they want us to go to college, get a four-year degree, and go get a job. Other groups don't do that. What they do is that they go to college, and what they will do is that they will invest in the family's business, you know, whatever ethnicity, you know, that they're coming from. And mainly, I bet you dollars to donuts is that you're going to have a whole lot of these immigrants coming in there doing this at the expense of us. Okay, it's because, you know, we went out there during the civil rights era, you know what I'm saying, got hit with fire hoses, got knocked all upside the head, you see what I mean? Then you had another organization that exercised its Second Amendment rights, and that they were declared public enemy number one through an illegal practice called the counterintelligence program. So what we're trying to do is to expand the awareness to our youth, the importance of becoming self-sufficient. Okay. Miss Sparks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I absolutely agree. I don't even think they want us to go to college, to be honest with you. They try to take that away. But
yes, ma'am.
Yes, self-sufficient, I absolutely agree. And I think it's going to happen. Like, I really think we are getting to a place of, especially, you know, people with a little more money than others, we are out here trying to start our own businesses. And I know we're on athletes, but I do see them starting to do that. You know, you have LeBron who's opening up his schools. You know, you have them starting to own businesses. You have Snoop. You know, they're going into those spaces where only white people occupy. So it's only a matter of time before we get there. Like, I'm pretty sure we are going to get there. I mean, we're owning our own alcohol at this point. You know what I mean? We're dispensaries, which have been really hard for black people to break into. You have black people doing it. Snoop's doing it. There's a number of black celebrities that are having weed dispensaries as well. So I think it's only a matter of time. I think we're going to get there. But who's giving up their team? What NFL owner is going to be like, yeah, you can buy my team? Are they giving, like, how is that going to happen unless we start our own league?
Okay, now that there, too. Now, you see what I'm saying? Now, that there, too, could happen. If you go back to the old baseball, black-owned baseball leagues, you see what I mean? Prior to Jackie Robinson, you know, coming into the Major League Baseball, then all the black players left the Negro Leagues and was trying to break into the mainstream baseball. You see what I'm saying? And then also, too, look at what Floyd Mayweather, you know, has done here in Las Vegas, where he started promoting his own fights. You see what I'm saying? So that is giving our people some work. You see what I'm saying? But where the drawback comes in at is Brother Che is quite familiar with Miss Sparks there, because we are in our eighth season right now. We get a lot of these haters that come with this illusion of inclusion, you see. But then when you go up there and mention reparations to them, you know, police brutality, George Floyd case, what have you, Elijah McCain case back there in Aurora, what have you. Oh, no, but the police are just doing their job when this is clearly flagrant.
He should have complied.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that type of stuff. And I'm surprised, you know, none of our haters have called in. Well, haters, we out here, Joe Gibson and Sergeant Bianchi, you know, so please give us a call. We know you saw the announcement, and we understand that you can't take this heat over here. Okay, so what it is that we're making it perfectly clear. See, this isn't hatred. This isn't racial bias or anything. It's just simply of us having our youth to become become more self-sufficient, okay? It's because, as the heavyweight champion had stated in the 1960s, and we don't have to say his name, we all know who he is, you see, is that he was on talk shows and doing that, and I remember in my youth, and they would say, well, okay, well, champ, if somebody wants to do your profession, what's the first thing they should do? And he pretty much had stated, well, first place, what they need to do is to forget about my profession, number one, and start building some businesses in the communities, because you still need grocery stores, you still need factories, you see what I mean? And then, of course, too, with everybody becoming, you know, environmentally conscious, hey, you know, do some innovation for more solar panels, or own some electricity companies, own some water companies, you see what I'm saying? Own some grocery stores, you know, own some more universities and what have you, see? Because, you see, this is all what these other groups are doing. You go down there to Stanford University in Palo Alto, the home of Silicon Valley, okay, you know, you see very, very few black students right there. The same thing there at the University of Denver, where Condoleezza Rice graduated from. Also do the same thing out there at UCLA and what have you, down there in Los Angeles, and the University of South Central, although it's called the University of Southern California. You see what I mean? In Los Angeles, where I grew up at. So therefore, we have to raise this conscious level, you see what I'm saying, to do for ourselves, okay? Because this is all what all these other groups are doing. This isn't hatred. You see what I'm saying? This isn't bigotry. This is just simply the science of macroeconomics. And like I said, and I will debate with any scholar coming in, Thomas Sewell, you can call in, elders, you got open invitation, because we will humiliate you and degrade you. Same thing with Leo Terrell and what have you. And then also, too, the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott, you're welcome to call in as well, too, because, you know, he got bumped, I believe, you know, about those presidential debates that they were having, is, you know, with Donald Trump and what have you. And the thing is about Donald Trump. Hopefully he goes to prison. He's violated his oath and what have you, and whatnot, you see. And then the cold part about it is that you know, so it's going to be, you know,
we lost her. I think we got Joe Gibbs. No, we got Sarge. It's either Sarge or Solution online.
Okay, and we lost Ms. Sparks. Okay. All righty. Okay, the unknown caller, your phone is unmuted. Who do we have?
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you, Ms.
Sparks. I called
Fox.
Back, the call dropped, so I just called back.
Okay, thank you so very, very much, ma'am. And this is what we mean right here. This is a part of the shadow ban that they do to us, but we're gonna still keep getting it.
Yeah, they dropped me yesterday. That's ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
Yesterday.
Yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, and then on top of it as well, too, you see, so this is nothing more than us becoming self-sufficient, you see, but I find it very, very interesting in the American ethos is that when these other groups come here and own businesses in the black community, well, they innovate and they're pursuing the American dream, but as soon as we say it, oh, well, you guys are racist, you see what I mean, and Ms. Paul Sparks, you should, you know, listen to some of our back episodes, man, but however, we do have warning labels on them because sometimes our episodes do go uncensored, you know what I mean? So if you have little ones around. Yeah. And then we've had knockdown dragouts out here, you know what I'm saying? And then also, too, we definitely want to give a shout out there to one of our contributors, Akshita Veda, very, very knowledgeable sister, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So if you hear us, if you hear us out there, Akshita, please give us a call, you know. So now, not only is it just football, okay, but the same thing with basketball. Now, let's look at here at the NBA, okay, going to the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and yeah, Brother Paris, I'm still down on those buckets there,
and
we're
still down on them Lakers.
No, man. Oh, man, you know, how are you going to be down on the our Lakers, man? That's LeBron's. You know, we've had Kobe. We've had Wilt Chamberlain. We had Elgin Baylor. We had Magic Johnson.
Yes.
Okay, but however,
their legacy
okay.
lives on. Their legacy lives on.
Oh, absolutely. And then, of course, too, with Magic Johnson, the reason why I brought him up is because he did buy a percentage of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I know you probably got some Dodger fans out there in Los Angeles, but I still refer to them as them bums, you know what I mean? And I love it when the New York Yankees play the L.A. Dodgers in the World Series, and I believe the Yankees have been getting the best of them. But that just goes to show.
The Rangers is the champs now.
Okay, but you know, but the L.A. Dodgers and the New York Yankees, they've been having this league-long rivalry because, as you know, they moved
from. I think that's the longest rivalry in sports.
Yes, sir, it's because they originally had moved from Brooklyn, New York to Los Angeles 1957, 1958, I believe. And they played in the Los Angeles Coliseum, which was the site of the 1932 Olympics, which was also the site of the 1984 Olympics, which will also be the site of the 2028 Olympics as well, too. But the thing that was kind of cold about Jackie Robinson is because he was only 53 years old when he passed away, and I think this was 1972, I think. Now, I'm an old guy right here. Now, let me rattle what's left of my memory. And I think that Mr. Robinson had stated, you know, in Johnson Publications, the Jet magazine, he says, you know, I never had it made. He says, I don't have it made here in 1972, just like I know I didn't have it made in 1947, and just like I know I didn't have it made in 1921 or 23 when he was born. And with Mr. Jackie Robinson, he was born in the South, but his family had moved when he was about 2 or 3 years old to Pasadena, California. Believe it or not. And I've been through Pasadena, California, and I do recall walking down the street in Pasadena many, many years ago, and I tripped over something on the road, I mean on the sidewalk. And then when I looked down and saw what I tripped over, I saw a plaque that says that this is Jackie Robinson's residence when he was a child here when he had first came to Pasadena. Okay, now, with the level of hatred that they are having, you know, toward us now, I think the best way to countermand that is through black economics. And then as a loved one had told me earlier today, okay, now how will we go about to do it? It's a mighty, mighty hill to climb. You know, it's a very, very steep angle. Okay, so do we do this here through group economics, educating our youth, or what? Comments, please.
Youth, for sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I just go back to, like, what you were saying about, like, you're talking about the youth and grabbing them when they're young and, you know, and the racists know that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that, and that is exactly why they're doing what they're doing in school. That is exactly why they don't want our history taught, black history taught. They don't want black children to understand the glorious history of the black struggle, because, you know, it was glorious. It was hard, but it's a glorious thing because we rose up. Those people got a 400-year head start, and look where we are. Of course, we're not where we need to be, but they had a 400-year head start, right? We had a black president. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am, you're absolutely correct, and this is why, like, they're having this debate in California now about the reparations, is because, you know, some of our haters, and by the way, haters, you know, our chat room is open. We'll be happy to read your comments on air, okay, it's because if you checked out some of our most recent episodes, Ms. Sparks, starting for the last couple of weeks that we've been doing, we've been having a lot of people, OTBs, meaning other than blacks, saying, oh, well, what about the indentured servants and stuff like that, okay?
So ridiculous, like,
Yeah, it is. Okay, now, let me ask you a question, Ms. Parks. Okay, as you know, ma'am, okay, you're on the East Coast. Okay, what state are you in, if you mind me asking?
Not Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. All righty. Okay, you're there on the East Coast. Great. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. One of the New England states. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's near Boston,
mm-hmm.
you know. And by the way, and I hate them Boston. Yeah, I hate them Boston.
I know. Everybody hates Boston. Every time I say it, people go, you're in racist Boston. I'm like, do you act like other cities and states aren't racist? Like, stop playing right now.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. You know. And then in the NBA, the Celtics, I hate to say, they generally have L.A.'s numbers because the Lakers are blossoming championships. To them, it's pathetic. Now, also, too, Ms. Sparks, you know, bringing up some of the history of Boston, as you know, that there was an area that Malcolm X had lived in his teenage years prior to him going to prison, number one.
Yeah.
Also, too, and I'm turning back the hands of time and what's left in my memory, is about 1977, 78, they had a huge, huge, huge white opposition to busing in the schools there in Boston.
Right. And that's exactly where people go with, you know, racist Boston because of that. Yeah, go ahead. But, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And then there's a classic photograph in the Jet magazine, you know, part of Johnson Publications, okay, where they show this black man being beaten by these white folks or these white guys, and they kicking his brother, and they got one of them is holding an American flag on a pole where he is jamming it, you know, and to this man, he said, you see, so, you know, and I'm very disappointed in President Obama when he was the president, is because you would have figured that he, just being a black man in America, is that he would have pushed the agenda for the reparations. But however, he gets up there and says that he's against it. But however, he pushed the alphabetized agenda, okay.
They had a whole reparations team up in the White House doing that, and no one wanted to bring it to the House floor, right?
Exactly.
Isn't there,
yes, ma'am.
There's an actual big, but they couldn't do anything because they didn't have Congress.
Yes, ma'am. And then there was a congressman from Detroit by the name of John Conyers, who in 1980 had introduced, now what is that there, Brother Che, H.R., what was the number?
40.
Not 40. Yeah,
40?
H.R. 40. Yes, ma'am. And where he was talking about, hey, you got to have reparations and things of this nature right here. And the congressman was right. You know, he was in there for quite a few years, like Adam Clayton Powell. And then they got rid of Adam Clayton Powell because Adam Clayton Powell in the late 1960s had echoed the phrase black power. And he was in the Congress for 22 years, and they kicked him out of there, kicked him off all of his committees. So this here just goes to show is that America does not have a sense of fair play. Now, for all of our critics and our haters out there, well, if you feel that bad, why don't y'all just go on and lease? As soon as you cut the check for the reparations, yeah, I would like to check out the ancestral land. You know what I mean?
Right, but
we're going to keep it.
H.R. 40 is
yes,
a study. It's just
okay.
A study.
Okay.
It's a study.
Okay, okay.
I'm commissioned to study reparations.
Okay,
right.
Okay,
but,
okay.
But Osambo, when he was the president, he cut it in executive order.
Okay.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. Everyone just wants a check, and I think that's problematic because what are we going to do with that? Like, people are going to go and just spend it and do what? Give it back to the white man? Or do we want land? Or do we want stuff that we can – and I think that was the thing. Like, how do you get reparations? Do you just give everyone checks? I don't. There definitely needs to be some conversation about that because people are gonna.
Ma'am. You know,
that the Japanese got reparations, the same way that the Jews got reparations, the same way that the Native Americans got reparations. Everybody
that's
in
casinos.
They got reparations.
Okay.
They got money first. Some got
money
and land. They got
money and land.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember, yeah, to prove your point even further, too, Ms. Sparks, and you too, Brother Che, I do remember California, about within the last 15 years, they did allow the what they would call tribal land casinos like Pechanga and Morongo, another place called Thunder Valley up there in Northern California. Yeah, the casinos in California. And then, of course, you know, here in Sin City, you know, this whole state had legalized gambling in 1934 because they had just wanted people to come out here and develop the land, you know. Right. And then, of course, we all know that Bugsy Siegel created the Flamingo for his girlfriend, Virginia Hill, and it still sits right there on the corner of Flamingo and Las Vegas Boulevard to this very day, you know. And over the course of my lifetime, coming from Los Angeles back and forth to all of my adult years, I've lost so much money here, I felt that I built this place, you know what I mean? and then of course you do know that they have the boxing. Okay, most definitely, 228. Okay, and I think we know who that is, 228, and just press 1, and please join our conversation with our guest host, the one and only Ms. Rosa Sparks. Okay, so therefore, that there is a source of revenue, the gambling, like how you got a lot of states that have the lotteries. You see what I mean? Okay.
You know the lottery came from the numbers game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, most definitely. Out of Chicago, out of New York, you know, what's the film they made about the guy, Pumpy Johnson, in 1930s and 40s in Chicago. And then he was familiar with another man there who was very famous out of Harlem, New York. You know, the tall guy that used to wear the glasses, man, you know what I'm saying, that they used to call Detroit Red, you know what I mean?
I have another way, since we're talking about how the black community can generate more income.
I think
what really needs to happen, you know, the education, but on top of that, I think we need financial literacy.
I think
that oftentimes we're making the money, but we're also throwing away our money. We're throwing away wealth. And, of course, we just started to get, you know, be able to buy houses and getting these mortgages,
yes,
like,
ma'am.
It hasn't been, what, a couple of decades?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
but
ma'am.
How many people do you – oh, go ahead.
Okay, no, Ms. Sparks, you're our guest host, ma'am. Please finish your statement.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, how many people do you know, or even in your family, that someone has passed away and, like, the government has come in and taken the house, or because they owed money on the house, or they didn't leave a will, right? So their money and all their things, like, it's just, and then family fighting over it. Like,
it's the family fighting over
it. I just got married, and one of the first things that we had to do, because I already had a house and he did not, and he has a kid, was put the house in the trust, because if something happens to me, he gets it, which he's my husband, which is cool. But then if he dies, it will go straight to his kids, and my kids are wiped out, right? So, like, I have to protect their interests, and I think that we have to get to a place where we're protecting the future generation's interest so we can keep our generational wealth.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Our
absolutely.
Generational wealth, anyway.
Oh, yes, ma'am, absolutely. And this, what this does here is that this plants the seeds, you see what I'm saying, for the future generations to become self-sufficient. Okay, we got 228 right here. He has his hand up, and I think I know who that is. 228, yeah, you're on the air with us with our guest host, the one and only Ms. Rosa Sparks.
All right, thank you all for taking my call. Thank you all for welcoming me into this conversation. Hey, Mr. Shabaka, Ms. Sparks, how you doing? Was that there now?
Che, Jesse.
Yeah, what's going on? Good to hear your voice, man. Good conversation y'all got going on tonight, bro.
Oh, yes, sir. You should have been with us last night, artist. It was off the hook.
I live in Van Cleve, Mississippi, on the coast here. It's the ancestral homeland of the indigenous Pascagoula.
Okay.
And now one thing that watching the news unfold lately is that if we're going to have reparations, I think it should come with land.
Right.
I mean, like our own sovereign nation, and then some kind of way to protect that, because we're still dealing with colonialism. You know, if we're still dealing with their money and relying on them to keep their word, it's going to be the same old thing that happens every time. So,
like, there has to be guarantees. Like, they've literally broken every promise that they've ever given us. Like, we still ain't got our 40 acres and a mill, and that was a promise that was given to us after the Civil War. So,
yes, sir.
It's going to have to be something radical, and it couldn't be something where they give us land that's landlocked, and we don't have access to any ports or anything like that. But we have to make
land landlocked. They give us land that's super funded site. They give us land that's not fertile. They give us land that we can't grow nothing on, that we can't cultivate.
They put us on a reservation.
Exactly.
But except for Manhattan Beach, California, folks. Except for Manhattan Beach, California. That's a very, very nice area. And plus that, Brother Che, you saw the live feed that I did there from Manhattan, California. And then I believe that the county of Los Angeles had went on and gave it back to the families because it was hijacked through eminent domain. It was hijacked, man, you know, through deceitful tactics, just like when Malcolm X's father was killed in Michigan. The Reverend Errol Little, the insurance company, goes up there and tells his mother, well, ma'am, you know, he committed suicide, so we can't give you, you know, no money for it and what have you. So you have this systemic racism. You see what I'm saying? And then, of course, as Dr. Khalid Muhammad says, they're always propping up some bootlick, you know, half-baked, you know, brain dead, so forth and so on, you know what I'm saying, to pop up in front of us to say that he's speaking for the black community. But when Dr. Carl Anderson came out there and dropped knowledge on about getting some generational wealth, and just like he had stated in 2015, what's going to happen is that this new KKK coming against us is going to be these migrants. And then, of course, let's go Brandon at Sarge calls him, you know what I'm saying, there of Chicago, vote him out of office, you know what I'm saying, get rid of the other clown they have there in New York City, Eric Adams, because from what I understand, he's getting hit with the Me Too cases against him and stuff like that, just like in California with the O.J. Simpson case. You see what I mean? And this is why we've got to have our cohesiveness, you know, as Ms. Sparks had stated, you know, of the family, bringing back the black family unit together, and plus that having some generational wealth. Now, to prove her point even further, let's look at the city of San Francisco. Okay, you had a huge influx of Chinese migrants there during the gold rush when everybody was bum rushing the gold. And then, too, one of our elders, the one and only Frederick Douglass, he spent a lot of time there in San Francisco during the gold rush. And, you know, and he was a newspaper reporter. He'll say, but what they do is that they, you know, coagulate their wealth. You know, they keep it in the family. You see what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, our typical black youth, okay, well, we inherited this property from grandma and mama and daddy, but the first thing that you want to do is go sell it off to somebody else. Now, what proves this point right here, the West Adams District of Los Angeles, California, it's in the same area where
the History Museum is.
Yes, sir, that's in the Crenshaw District, okay? Jefferson Park. Yes, sir. Okay, and it is not too far from where Marvin Gaye's family had owned a house that Marvin had bought there off the corner of 21st and Gramercy, and unfortunately where he was shot at by his dad in 1984. You see, he had did that there in the early 60s. Now, what has happened is that the Koreans had went off into that community, because I had visited it, man, let's say about a little more than a year ago, Brother Che, and it's all foreign owned. You know, there are no more black families out there in that area, not too many anyway, and a majority of black people that you see in the city of Los Angeles are homeless. You see what I'm saying? Just like what you have there in Denver, the majority of the community that is homeless are black, and black people don't have a stronghold of the population there. In the city of Chicago, the majority of the homeless are black folks living up under the viaducts and what have you and things of that nature right there. Winter's getting ready to come in. The same thing there in Boston. You know what I'm saying? And then, but what happens is that everybody's going to bum rush Florida and California, you know, for the sunshine. You see what I mean? So we got to raise the conscious level amongst our youth, you know, to generate and to keep that generational wealth from going on. And I'm sure all of us have played dominoes at one time or another. And what's that old classic saying?
All money ain't good money. Yep.
Yes, sir. You know what I'm saying? Okay, Ms. Sparks, your comments, ma'am.
Gosh, I had a comment. Okay, so you just reminded me, like, so here in Massachusetts, and this is another way that we actually lose money, gentrification, and I know all communities are going through it, Massachusetts for sure, and Massachusetts, it's very expensive to live in Massachusetts, and we have... the pay is pretty good, but it's just very expensive, right? And there's a lot of gentrification going on, just like New York, because New York looks like a different place. And so are the places here in Massachusetts. And the crazy thing is, right, like I don't mind diverse areas. Like that, there's nothing wrong with that. Diversity, there's absolutely nothing wrong with diversity. I don't care about that. But however, if you are like – a non-black person or a non-brown person moving into the community, then you should be frequenting those businesses, right? Because how are you going to enjoy our land and our, you know, the property?
Right.
But then you don't even go into the local store, or New York would call them bodegas, right? Like you're
the little mom and pop stores,
You're not, and that's how we lose the money, right? Because what happens is the black people who previously owned those homes, because taxes are getting so high, they can't afford them anymore. It's very expensive to live in the city of Boston. So, you know, we buy the houses on the outskirts, because what's happening is a reversal, right? Black folks used to live in Boston, right? That was our place. But then when you buy a home, it's so expensive, we move on the outskirts of Boston. And then buy the homes, right? But the mom and pop businesses are still there, and they're not frequenting them. They put the Black Lives Matter, put the Black Lives Matter sign in their lawn.
But they won't go patronize no Black Lives Matter business.
Exactly. And that's one of the problems, too. It's like, hey, yeah, you can move here. If you're going to be diverse, be fucking diverse the whole time. Be the whole, go in on it, right? Don't come in trying to change shit, saying you're complaining about the man selling the incense on the corner. Like, that's the cultural identity of the neighborhood. And they come in and they want to change that.
And that's some of the
problems that I have. And we lose money that way as well, because now those mom and pop stores, they can't survive because, you know, a lot of the black people have moved out of that area who was keeping those businesses alive, you know. And those businesses can't function on the outskirts, right, out in the suburbs. Another thing is happening here in Massachusetts. A lot of Caribbean restaurants are doing very well in the suburbs. It appears that white folks love Caribbean food at this point. Like, I don't know, but they love it.
Situation going on here with our historically black district of Five Points. These crackers, they live in the neighborhood now, but they don't patronize none of the businesses on Long Welton. They don't patronize none of the business, and then when we have our festivals, they don't come out and patronize any of that either. Like, we have one of the biggest Juneteenth festivals in the country, and these crackers will not come out and buy anything. They'll come out, they'll sight see, but they won't buy
right.
anything from any other black vendors.
Right.
And that's crazy.
Exactly.
And those are the people that they call, those are the ones that call themselves liberals. Those
right.
are the ones that are like, I like the blacks, I'm down with BLM, but they're down to a certain point, right? Now, there are also white folks that have been there since day one, because I grew up with some, right? Like, they've been in the neighborhood because
okay.
they were poor whites, right? So
yeah.
they know. But like these are like the new whites. These are like the whites that grew up in the suburbs and now
mm-hmm.
are coming into the city because they're like,
yeah,
oh, it's close to my job.
Right.
And that's what they call gentrification. And then also too,
exactly.
Mrs. Sparks.
Well, it's more
with,
like ethnic cleansing. The gentrification is a nice
pretty
word,
much.
But,
yeah, pretty
right.
much is because when you look at Oakland, California, okay, we're the people that only make up about 14% of the population there, but yet though we're making up 40% of the homeless population right there. You see what
right.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get off
Oakland,
to West Oakland,
more black people than that. Y'all used to be like 30-40% of the population.
Right. You see, but the cold part about it is that here in California, you know, well, in California, I'm in Nevada now, is that we only make up, like, say, what is it? I think it was 18% of the population, but yet we're making up, you know, almost 39% of the inmate population. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then too, and we all know that a certain organization had started there, and they were declared public enemy number one. You see, so this is systemic. And then, you know, moving on, you know, to the debate with Gruesome Newsom and Ron the Panty.
Hold on, what's your foreign?
Yes, sir.
We should think about other forms. There should be more than just money in the package, in the reparations package. So I'd say we should money, land, anti-black hate crime legislation. So if you commit a crime against a black person, it's a hate crime, and you're going to go to jail, you're going to go to prison for doing such, because they passed these hate crime bills for these Asians, they passed these hate crime bills for the LGBTQIA plus whatever community.
Right.
So they can easily do it for us, especially since we're supposed to be the base of the Democratic Party. Specifically, black
right.
women are supposed to be the base of the Democratic Party. So that's the least
right.
they can do. And then a tax-free exemption for like
mm-hmm.
the next 100 years.
Yeah. And land grants.
Yeah, grants, not
yeah.
loans, grants.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Artist, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Ms. Sparks, I was going to touch on something that y'all was just rolling into. How do y'all have any idea? I might have missed this, but how do y'all have any idea on how we could hold that reparations promise hostage, you know, this soon before an election coming up? Because I think right now,
the Democratic Party is kind of weak. We made that mistake in 2020. We've seen how they did Ice Cube with the contract for Black America. They told him, Biden and crew, we meet with you after the election. And then they would give him hell because Trump, somebody from, it wasn't even Trump himself, but somebody from his administration was willing to meet with Ice Cube. And they tried to paint him as an enemy of Black people. And, he's tried with the Republicans. No, he was willing to meet with both parties. And Biden said after the election, you know, Biden still has not met with ICE. And it's been 3 years now, and he still has not met with him. So we got to get it before the election. So we got to get that, I don't even want to say promise at this point, because they break every single promise. That obligation to your base, that you're going to do this, and you're gonna have to show and prove. Like you're gonna have to give us something, throw something out here, a down payment on what it's owed, just to let us know that you're serious. I mean, if Biden was even remotely even close to serious, H.R. 40,
yeah.
that entailed, that would already been done already.
Mm-hmm.
If that, that hasn't even been created yet. It's literally just collected dust.
Right.
HR-40. But even if it was created, it's just a commission. It's a commission to study reparations. You know what you did. You know what you continue to do. We got the data. We got the figures. We got all of that. Just come correct and cut the goddamn check. They don't want to do it. They want to give money to Israel. They want to give money to Ukraine. They want to give money to everybody but us. So we got to make it very clear before the election that if you want our vote, you're going to have to do something tangible for us. Or we'll just spit it out or we'll vote third party. And that's what they're scared of. They're scared of that. They're scared of spitting it out.
I'm scared of that, too. We cannot do that. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, I get what you're saying. But we don't have the House and the Senate. Like, shit doesn't get passed unless we have the House and the Senate. The House won't. When did we have it, though? Like, at what point? Because it was very short. No one came back to vote.
From 2008 to 2012,
we had the House and the Senate and the presidency because we got to have it all.
Yes, we have that.
I need to.
We had to look
that up because let's not act like somebody, the president, can just be like, "Yo, here's your check," when the House won't even pull up voting rights. We can't even get voting rights right now. Like, we can't, there are so many things that are on the table that we can't even get because the House won't look at it. They won't touch it. So voting for third party, how does that help us? How does it help us to get Trump? How does Trump help us?
I'm sorry to cut you off, sister. I apologize.
Yeah, I think it challenges the system. It disrupts the system.
It doesn't challenge the system when women can't have a choice to do what they want to do with their bodies. When you have a seventh grader in Mississippi that had to have a baby from a raper, that's not challenging the system. That's making
I think there needs to be a third party.
Banning books? That's not challenging the system.
I think it needs to
banning
be a third
books.
Party.
The fear mongering isn't working no more, Ms. Parks. We're past the fear mongering. We've already lived under 4 years of Trump. There was no policy that Trump passed that directly hurt Black Americans.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what.
What?
In other words, Ms. Parks, what you're saying is. Yeah, there was never
no either way, it's a no-win for us. You keep saying that we can't set it out, and we're like, no, we can't set it out because we're not getting nothing from either party. So if we have the option of either setting it out,
right now. A lot of people got their loans forgiven, right? He made that promise.
I didn't get
no
email.
The Supreme Court shut it down, right?
Because
nothing you can do once it was. The Supreme Court shut it down, right? He made it official. It went to the Supreme Court. They shut it down. So he went back to the drawing board, his administration, and reworked and made it so that, how they did the... how you were making your payments before, they found that they were wrong, right? Under all the other administrations, you were paying too much back. So the people who had already been paying, he forgave those. And now they set it up that if you make a certain amount of money, and I know this because my son pays zero every month, because I'm like, shit, let me see if he falls under, this new math that's being done, and he doesn't have to pay anything. So they're like, thousands and thousands of people that did help. I mean, and there's a lot of things. Like you say, it doesn't help black people specifically. No one's coming to the door to help
you. We're not going for
Kamala
Harris.
Kamala
Harris straight up told us
how,
he wasn't going to do anything
for us. That's not true. How does more jobs not help us, though? What? Okay.
Because
so
more jobs doesn't
mean so
the prison industrial complex.
Black people
the prison
to college, right? So the black people that did go to college, okay, it might benefit them. But how many of the total population of black people in America, how many of those are college graduates?
Okay. All right, let's see if we can pull up a statistic here, Brother Che. Okay. I'm going to see right here. Okay, and what the question is how many, okay, black students are going to colleges, or how many black high school graduates are going to college?
Because if you're going to college, they, you know, you're susceptible to collect loans, depending on what your economic situation is at that time.
Right.
So.
Yeah, because I do know one thing. When they had that TV show on called A Different World, okay, and this here was in the late 1990s, I believe, prior to 92, you know, the enrollment had went up, you know, in the college, you know, for black students. You see what I mean?
Yeah, HBCUs. The HBCUs ain't even benefiting us no more.
Yeah, exactly.
None of that was intended to benefit us, not benefit us. We talk about civil rights and our ancestors died for us to have the right to vote. No, our ancestors died that voting. Going to be the way to get us to our liberation and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We see 60 years of doing the same old thing, expecting a different result. It's not working now. So what do we do now? The voting has not benefited the collective of us as a whole. It hasn't benefited us at all, really. But
So what we do on that point there?
It's been nothing but symbolism. There's nothing tangible that comes from that. There's nothing tangible from having Ketanji Brown on the Supreme Court. There's a black face in a high place. If the system's going to remain the same, then there's going to be nothing. And it don't matter what the faces are, they're just going to...
So the black judges that he appointed doesn't help us either? Like, I don't understand, because there's so much. How is the black judges not helping?
How many of us go to federal court? Really? How many of us go to federal court?
They're not all, but they're not...
The only way it helps us is if we're criminals or suspected of being criminals. That's the only way that's going to help us. And how many of us have to get our case up to the federal court? We're going to live vicariously through her because she sits on a high seat. She can make decisions.
I didn't say just her. I'm saying all of the judges. He's appointed the most judges. Like, I really don't understand how having Donald Trump as the president and Republicans in office, how does that help black people? But, Shabaka, it's 8 o'clock. I have to check out because it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's late.
Oh, okay. All righty. Okay. But thank you so very, very much, Ms. Sparks, you know, for joining us. And we really did, you know, enjoy your presence, ma'am. And then also, too, you got our number, and we come on every Tuesday night on the regular. And please get with us in the future. And it was a real pleasure of having you. And thank you so very, very much.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sparks. Okay.
All right, have a good evening.
You too. Okay, and then also, too, and that there's the one and only Ms. Rosa Sparks. You know, we appreciate her for chiming in for the hour. Okay, you still with us, Brother Artemis, out of Mississippi?
Yes,
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, I see that Joe Gibson, you know, has his show on right now as well, too. So I'm telling him, you know, that, you know, they're welcome to come on over with their hate mail. But I pulled up a statistic right here. It's what Brother Che was saying is about the black college enrollment rate. Okay, so according to this, in October of 2022, the college enrollment rate was 64.1% for black high school graduates, which is lower than the rates for Asians, which is 72%, whites is 61%, and Hispanics is 58%. In 2019, the college enrollment rate was only 50.7% for black high school graduates, which is lower than the rates for Asians, whites, and Hispanics. And then this just showing the trend that, you know, when our black college students go into college, okay, a lot of them are basically going there on athletic scholarships as opposed to educational scholarships. You see what I mean? And then, of course, as we do know, is that that's what we was mentioning at the beginning before you joined us, Brother Artemis, you know, about blacks, you know, buying on a collective basis these professional sports teams. You see what I mean? And then even if they don't make it as an athlete, you still got assistant trainers there. They still need administrative assistants right there. They still need managers, you know, equipment managers, you know, what do they call that, logistics, as they put the data together, you know what I'm saying, you know, as the team travels, what hotels they're going to be staying in and things of this nature right here. Yes, sir. So, you know, we got to look at that there, too. We got to get that there by the horns as well, too. You see what I mean? And so, and then, you know, when you got, you know, people like Ron DePanties, you know, and I'm calling him a transvestite, so I call him the Panties. And he's sick, you know what I'm saying? He should be recalled. Me, personally, I think he should either be committed to a jail cell or an insane asylum, if not both, you see. So, well, you know, this woke theory makes our folks feel so uncomfortable. Well, just imagine how comfortable we was when them fire hoses got hit on us. Imagine how uncomfortable we was when that nightstick was gliding us gracefully upside the head. And, you know, and imagine how uncomfortable we felt with the Rodney King, George Floyd cases, Eula Love cases, you know what I'm saying? Mr. Diallo there. Mr. Diallo back there in New York and things of this nature right here. But then when you get these puppet-ass politicians, you know, your Eric Tom Bradley's, London Bridge, what have you, just what service are they doing for us specifically? Now,
nothing. No, they don't do nothing for us. They're not doing nothing specifically for us. When it is brought up, and what happened about it, they came. I'm like, no, stop playing with us. Like,
right. Exactly. You see, so what we got to do is go out here and call some type of affirmative action of hitting them where it hurts, which is in the pocketbook, right?
And now it's a problem. Not everybody else got to compete.
Okay. I'm wondering. Excuse me. I'll jump into the conversation a little bit. If we're gonna hit somebody in the pocketbook, who exactly do we hit? Because now I'm looking at
the people who
own everything.
That's the
ones
we hit.
Okay,
because,
I would say,
you know, you look at like BlackRock and Vanguard. They own everything. You know,
right.
And they fund everything. Now, how do we?
Right.
Now, we don't have our government is not in a position to challenge those people because they're bought and paid for by those people. So,
right.
That's what I'm thinking, that there should be some sort of a third party challenge, somebody that's not attached to the system.
Okay, now third-party candidacy, Mr. Artist, yeah, that's definitely a step in the right direction. You see what I mean? And then also, too, as we acquire the wealth, you know, financially, you see what I'm saying, then we could do some moving and shaking with that. You see, so let's say, for an example, if the black community on a collective basis, you know, let's say had, let's say, $100 billion.
Hold on. Black people in America by next year are going to have $1.6 trillion. That is enough money. That's more money than Qatar has. Qatar are in the so-called Middle East, one of the richest countries in the world.
Right.
We have the money. We have the capital. We have it. We just don't have the cohesiveness.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that means, so the cohesiveness is the key right there. It's just like what Brother Malcolm said, you know, when you separate these digits, they'll sting you. But if you want to put somebody in their place, just simply bring these digits together. Okay. So how do we go about to bring the digits together? What are the digits? One is real estate. Two is education. Three is cooperative economics. Four is knowledge of one's history and self. Five is turning our backs on London Bridges or Ramble Sambo or Ben Carson and Hollywood. You see what I'm saying? So how can we bring that there together? Now, it's doable. All we just need is the innovation.
Get that together by getting on code. Everything that that's the code. So the more of us that get on and with that, the better off we'll be. But to answer artist's question, the small hats and these goddamn these Arabs that set up shop in our community. Everybody sets up shop in our communities if they want to be successful.
Yeah, you're right, particularly with the hair shops, you know, where, you know, the women's wig shops and what have you, is because I remember, man, just for the hell of it, Brother Paris, to prove your point even further, and check this out here too, Brother Artist, I'm going through East Oakland, and I'm going into, you know, the wig shops. I did about five of them, right, and
like
I already
knew. Businesses got to step their quality and customer service up, like...
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? Exactly. So therefore, I'd ask the owners, who are mostly Asian, okay, what black vendors do you guys purchase wholesale from? No. We get from Manila. We get from Hong Kong. We get from Shanghai. No. You know what I'm saying? Okay, then when it comes to the Latino business.
I was saying all hidden colors 10 years ago. Well, where's our food here? Where do we go?
Exactly.
They shut down all the restaurants and then shut down all the stores. Where are we going to go to food?
Right. Okay. So now we have to get some innovation going on. You see what I'm saying? To build these restaurants back. Now, I do remember, you know, in my childhood, you had a whole lot of soul food restaurants.
Oh, yeah. There was a whole lot of them. But the hood lived in the hood. That's why there was a whole lot of them. And they were so prosperous. Because we actually had cohesion. It was forced cohesion.
Exactly.
But we had cohesion.
Yes, sir.
And that's what we're lacking.
Yes,
that's why it's reparations or separation. Cut the check and let's go. Like, I don't give us whole space. You can just give us the whole South. How about that? The whole South is all black. And we got our own, that's our own territory to do what we please with.
Right, because I think Jay Dizzle has said it. Yeah, and I believe Jay Dizzle made a great point instead of the new African Republic, you know, in the southern states, you know.
The new African Republic.
Yes, sir. Okay, now how feasible is that, Mr. Artist, you know, with you being down there in Mississippi?
I think this is where the Black America should be. And I also think when it comes to balancing it out so that we have a chance, because I really do. We know that, you know, if the colonizers get us all the black folks in one place at the same time, eventually they're gonna attack us just like they do everybody else. You know, they're gonna try to colonize us again. You know, those large investors, we look at militaries like countries and things like that, but it's not really countries. Their largest investors in military companies are Vanguard, BlackRock, people like that. And so Vanguard owns Boeing. You know, that's the largest investor in Boeing, you know?
Wow.
And they own, pretty much everything, bro. We went to the March on Fossil Fuels in New York a couple of months ago. We're outside of BlackRock office, and they are the largest investors in private prisons. They're the largest investors in guns and bombs. They're the ones who sponsor Boeing for making the bunker buster bombs. So if they go after those kinds of people as far as reparations, but if we just like they broke up the monopoly in the energy company,
right.
Do that same thing with the new Black America for reparations.
Okay.
You take their resources and divide them up and give their resources to Black America so that we are able to defend ourselves once we're standing on the other side of the border from them.
Yes, sir. Okay.
That only makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm with that. That makes a whole lot of sense. Hold on here, Brother Jay. I'm going back here to this book right here. Hold on here. Let me see here. And we discuss point number 7 all the time, but there was another point right here. Okay, let's see. All righty. Point number 4, we want decent housing fit for shelter of human beings, okay? And we want education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want education that teaches us our true history and our role in the present day society, okay? And let me see here, okay, point number 10, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace, and a major political objective, a united nation.
All the tenets of the 10-point program fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Money's not just it. That's part of the reparations package. There's a whole lot that's going on to this going into 2014, and more will be fulfilled because the new Black media grassroots, we control the narrative now. So every way we go, the rest of the nation's gonna go. And the cartoon Nazi network and Fox News, they have to come to grips with that. The MSNBC,
right.
Because we're knocking them out the paint. They can't keep the talking heads that look like us.
Right.
Up here. Because they're not talking like us.
Right.
You know, they're talking like us. The brothers and sisters in Chicago. That's giving goddamn Johnson hell behind the goddamn iron. They're right from the show.
Yeah. And then also, too, you know, we need to turn our back on these politicians. You know, these Brandon Johnsons and what have you, the ones, who are not, representing us.
If we can demonstrate this kind of cohesion by buying our own teams, our own league,
right.
We could surely do that with our reparations.
Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying, without a doubt. You know what I mean? Definitely without a doubt. And then, two, is that you got to look at the fact that we got to educate, ourselves, on the homeschooling. You know what I'm saying?
You can get whole degrees online now. Like, there's so much out there. You just got to know where to look for the homeschooling. They got a whole curriculum. Online,
right.
Whole school online are Black or
Afrocentric. Mhm. Exactly. See, so that's what we need more emphasis on, is because it's just incredible of how they tell all these other groups, well, go out there and do this, do that, for yourselves. But as soon as we come up there saying that, man, then all of a sudden, that we, are a bunch of racists.
Lady J in the house. Thank you for calling. And Lady J, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Hey, how you doing, Lady J?
Okay. I'm sorry I'm late. And I missed most of the conversation, but I'm here, so started listening and see if I could contribute. That's all.
Oh, yeah.
How's everybody going?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
No, yeah. We got Mr. Artist with us this evening. We did have Ms. Rosa Sparks with us. You know what I'm saying? She could only have been with us an hour. We appreciate her, you know, for coming and calling in on the East Coast as well, too. So, but we are still emphasizing on, you know, controlling the economics in our community, and then of course turning our backs on these politicians who are not going
there's a
down.
Little, there's like a little buzzing feedback for the Shabaka.
Okay, yeah. How do I sound now?
Much better.
How far away?
Okay, yeah. This is that's the
now
head shit.
Last 10 minutes, I actually extended the show, so I kind of figured we have some late callers. So we got
okay,
10 minutes.
Okay, we got 11 minutes. Yeah, so we got 10 minutes left, okay, so we
has
might
it been
well
the 3 hours
up.
Already?
No, we only did the show for an hour. You see, uh-oh, we got a 347 number right here. Okay. Okay, 347,
Yo, over here. Yo, I'm calling in from my platform here with a bunch of callers on the line.
Oh, okay, Joe. How you doing? Okay.
You're down to the wire with it, Joe. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So don't nobody hang. Okay, don't nobody.
I got Ron Reck on the line, too. I got Ron Reck on the line also.
Okay,
Ron Reck and a few others.
Okay, all right. We had
a voice to the text.
Okay, and we had a special guest, you know, who could only deal with us for an hour. So what we're talking about, Joe, basically, is why black athletes should start crowd controlling major leagues that they participate in, the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, is because we generate the wealth for them. You see what I mean? And then you have a lot of those that state, well, you know, pro sports is the new plantation system, you know, the way how they do the black athletes is because we also was discussing that asshole, you know, who is a part of the Washington Commanders and still is and says, well, if black athletes don't like how we're doing in pro sports, they need to form their own leagues. And we all for it, man, for forming their own leagues, Joe. Now, what do you got to say about that? And bring one, bring all, man. Come on, let's get ready to rumble. You know, we can go into overtime on this.
Well, we want – so what are you saying? You want to form – we want to form our own leagues. We're going to have a white league. We're going to have a black league.
I'm talking about black athletes forming their own leagues is because the owner of the Washington Commanders had stated a few months back that if the black football players don't like what's going on here in the NFL, then they need to form their own leagues. And I say let's call them out on it is because I honestly believe after a five-year period, you see what I'm saying, is due to the exceptionability of the black athlete is that this here will pull the general public away from these NFLs, these Major League Baseballs, and the NBA, and go see the exceptional black athlete. Now, here's one for you folks, okay? All you guys are a little bit younger than me, and also, too, we got Brother Artist with us, Joe, is that Jimmy the Greek. Everybody remember Jimmy the Greek? Okay, who was the odds maker, and he was also okay, and Jimmy the Greek had made the reason why the black athlete was superior because due to slavery, he was conditioned to be such. Now, they fired the Greek. I disagreed with them firing the Greek off the NFL today. It's because the Greek made a straight-up actual fact, you see. So then what happens is as
well, he made an opinion. That was an opinion, and he was allowed to do that.
Okay, but Joe, he stated the fact is because when you work from sun up to sundown as a slave, particularly being a male, you're going to get in shape one way or the other.
Well, let's look at that, Chewbacca. Well, let's look at that. Well, let's go by sport then. Who would you think the best boxer was of all time? Obviously, Rocky Marciano. He was undefeated.
Rocky Marciano fought bums, Joe. He fought bums. All them dudes were past their prime, man. Walcott was past his prime, man. Lewis was past his time, man. You know what I'm saying? And those were great guys, okay? Now, you familiar with Knockout Kings on the digital game, Joe?
No, I don't play video games too much. I start
Nonsense. Okay, I don't blame you. Okay, when I was younger, man, you know, I think about the earlier part of the 21st century, you know, they had knockout kings, and what you could do is that they had all-time greats, you know, so therefore this here was, what do they call this here, artificial intelligence in the beginning, okay, that you could pick the champs fighting the older champs. So I took Ali, okay, and I matched him up against Marciano because it says that they supposed to have as best as they could, all the attributes and what have you. So I took Ali, I knocked Marciano out in the second round, and it said that the guy that you had knocked out, you broke his jaw and ended his career. Okay? You see what I'm saying? And then, too, Joe, Ali came in, you know,
with the video game.
I understand that, Joe. Now, keep in mind that Ali had a great deal of respect for Rocky Marciano, okay? Now, okay, and they did have a, what do they call that? They made it in a 1969. Okay, you had two versions of it. The computer
fight. Yeah, they did an interview. Yeah, they actually did make one. Yeah, I remember that. And they interviewed Ali and Marciano about it. Yep.
And one version, Ali knocks Marciano out. Then another version, man, they said that Marciano knocks Ali out. And I cannot see it, Joe. Marciano was only 5'11" and only weighed 185 pounds, man. Ali was 6'3", man, and his average weight, man, would come in 215, 220. And just off the law of physics and with Ali's hand coordination and his speed, man, he would have shut dude down, man. He would have shut him down.
Let's go to another sport. What I'm suggesting, I'm just making a suggestion is that since we're making this comparison, let's go sport by sport and go, you know, who was the best white guy and who was the best black guy, and let's have an honest discussion about it.
Okay, so I guess you want to start with golf first, right?
No, I don't consider that a sport. Let's go to basketball.
That's a sport. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, let's go. Okay, let's
miniature
go to Boston, Joe.
Miniature golf,
okay.
I'm telling you. I was great to windmill. I really was.
Okay, now let's go to a place called, okay, Joe, okay, let's go with boxing. Okay, glad you brought it up. Turn back the hands of time now. If you got your laptop in front of you, pull up July 4th, 1910 in Reno, Nevada.
1910, Reno, Nevada. Wow, you're going way back there. Who the heck was that fighting?
Yeah. On the 4th of July, it was a guy named Jack Johnson, you know, who was the first black heavyweight champion, right? And Jack Johnson used to beat his opponents, and he would sit there and just smile while he's beating them, right? So there was a former champion before Jack Johnson that retired, who retired undefeated, and the white fellas go to him and says, well, James J. Jeffries, you got to come out of retirement, man, and you got to go put this boy in his place, man, and
can we stay within the last 50 years, please? Can we stay within the last 50 years? I mean, you know, I know you. You're going to go back 200 years to something that has no, you know, it was written in crayon. Let's get something we can verify.
Trying to show
up
for your buddies?
Okay,
Are you showing up for your friends? Are you showing up for your pals?
We're having an honest discussion.
Okay, Joe. Okay, hold on, Joe. Now, here's one for you. Let's talk about the Brown Bomber, the great Joe Louis.
Ooh. Okay. And let's see here. Who was in his division? Well, yes, you're going different divisions now. You know, so
Joe Louis was a former heavyweight champ. He was the former heavyweight champion of the world, Joe.
My God.
My brother said, what about Floyd Mayweather?
Right.
Okay, now hold on. Now, wait a minute, Lady Che. Now, you brought up the right one.
I don't know, man. I'm sitting here with my brother. We could hear, you know, I thought everybody could bring friends.
Yeah, but Floyd Mayweather's undefeated 50-0.
Damn. Sorry, I couldn't bring no friends. Joe brought all his white friends.
Didn't I bring my brother?
Okay, of course you could bring your friends. Of course you could bring your friends, Lady Tate. Now, okay, I had the pleasure one day of stopping by Floyd Mayweather's gym out here in the
Las Vegas. Yeah, you're right. He was heavyweight.
Yeah, no, Floyd Mayweather was the welterweight champion of the world.
You were right.
Hold on, brother Che.
You're
going to love. Okay, hold on, brother Che. I got to say this right here. Because, see, Joe, you telegraphed your punch again by a country mile. You're going to bring up this bum Tyson Fury, right? He's garbage. Okay.
How about Max Baer?
Straight
How about
out.
Max Baer?
Okay, Max Baer.
Max
yeah,
Baer.
Joe, yeah, Max Baer. Yeah, Jethro Bodine's dad, who was Max Baer Jr., who played Jethro on the Beverly Hills, okay? Max Baer, yeah, you know, he got shut down.
Well,
the Cinderella man.
Yeah, but they all got shut down eventually. I mean, Joe Louis, was, yeah, even though as good as he was, he still lost at the end there. He got knocked, you know, I mean, you know, so he won't go in their prime. They were the best. Max Baer in his prime was the best.
Okay, but
you know,
also, too, but Rocky Marciano, Joe, Ali would have kicked the dog crap out of him, man.
Undefeated,
just
though.
Along.
Undefeated.
Okay,
undefeated.
But look at the dudes.
Undefeated,
okay,
though.
But hold on. Okay, hold on,
Professor
Joe.
Floyd Mayweather was undefeated, too, still.
No, Floyd Mayweather
and?
Is undefeated, Lady Che. He's talking about heavyweights. Okay, now hold on
okay,
here.
Here.
Now,
go.
I got to go.
Go.
Yeah, I'm going to do like it with Brother Che. Che does. Okay, we're going to go here to... Hello?
I wanted to, like, switch sports here, you know. Go,
what's the next sport, Joe? We already did boxing.
Okay.
What's that?
Okay,
we did boxing already. How about basketball? Let's go to basketball.
Okay. No,
but you really don't got
any
white basketball players except for like a handful now.
Oh, come on, Larry Bird, come on. Even Jordan said he was.
Joe, what about the dude on the Nuggets right now? The white dude on the Nuggets right now.
Yes, Bill Russell. Bill Russell had what, 11 championships? Was it 11?
Yeah, and they did a lot of it at the Lakers' expense too. And then if anybody is smart.
Anytime
the Lakers play the Celtics in the NBA championship, put your money on Bob.
Let's not forget about the
You know what I'm saying? No, Lady Che, the Harlem Globetrotters.
Hey, Shabaka.
Yeah.
Hey, Shabaka, remember this one? BLA.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You remember
that?
We are Baker Lake Show haters over here. We don't like the Lake Show.
Man, you guys are the buckets back there. Yeah,
we are.
The
okay, so pick your favorite basketball,
Nuggets,
black basketball player,
Nuggets,
and white basketball player.
Haters
want to Joe
call
Gibson.
Us, we are still the champions. Right now.
Man, you guys got to win three champions to be called champions. You guys got to win three championships.
That's
so
true.
That's true. Okay, and Brother Artis has dropped off, and we thank Brother Artis, you know, for here for calling in.
You're always welcome to come on our program.
You didn't have anything to say to weigh in on the black sports factor?
Okay, but that's it, though.
Along. We're talking about boxing. I was asking Joe Gibson what next. He said NBA, basketball. We talking basketball.
Okay, but Joe, Brother Che, was talking about Rocky Marciano. Okay, but guys,
oh, man,
Marciano knocked out. Okay,
but
Joe Louis is past his prime. Yeah. Joe Louis is past his prime. Okay, Ezra Charles was past his prime. Okay, he won the title in an elimination bout fighting a former light heavyweight champion by the name of Archie Moore when Joe Louis had retired, okay? Rocky Marciano had knocked out
Joe Gibson?
Butterbean.
What's that, excuse me?
Yeah, she's talking about
Butterbean,
the four-round champion.
You like Butterbean? He's white.
Okay, but Lady Che, Butterbean is a joke.
Guy. He actually looked like a Liverpool.
Okay, no, but that's just it, though, Lady Che. Butterbean has got too much gut on him. He was the four-round champion. You know, I want to know how.
Big old heavy piece of meat, man.
Yeah, but how is he going
to
be the four-round champion?
I used to like watching him on the classic boxing.
Okay, but see, but
how
he,
about
he
baseball?
Was...
How about baseball though? What's the baseball? Come on, Babe Ruth. Come on now.
Okay.
You got tickets
well,
to
Minicus okay,
baseball,
hold
Larry?
Hold
now.
On, Joe. Okay, Joe, you're
you
talking
said,
about
right.
Babe Ruth, and then
player.
Keep in mind, Joe, as that
right,
I remember back in, 1974 when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record is because it was the same year that Ali regained the heavyweight championship in Central Africa when he stopped Big George Foreman. Okay, so what do you want to do, Joe? Basketball, boxing, baseball, or what?
Like Puerto Rican, Dominican, or Cuban?
Okay, well, hold on a second, eh? Whoa, hold on, Lady Che. You got something there on baseball on that one there. Look at the great Roberto Clemente.
Sosa, Rodriguez.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa. Okay, you see what I'm saying? And then they did have a lot of great baseball players that did come out of the Dominican Republic.
They're definitely from the diaspora.
And Rod Carew.
The white guy today. Who the best is in the one sport today? Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the GOAT. Come on. You can't.
Man,
that's
Tom
football
Brady
player.
Is so garbage, man. Tom Brady is garbage. Come on. No, Joe. Look what they did to Doug Williams. Okay, hold on. Look what they did to Doug Williams. Okay, look what they did to Doug Williams when he beat the Broncos, and he was the backup quarterback to Mark Rippon. Okay, Mark Rippon got hurt, okay?
Yeah,
and I know this is a bad memory for you too, Brother Che.
He was the one
who
was
hurt. Peyton was the GOAT now.
No, but what happened is, though, Joe, the man came off the bench, came back from the ending of the game.
What about Joe Montana?
Okay, got the MVP. Okay, and then they did. Okay, and then they gave and they fired Doug Williams, you know, and he's the coach at Grambling. Okay, now, speaking of the San Francisco 49ers, okay, Boys Town, I hope
Montana.
They lose.
Thank you.
Okay, now.
No.
Okay, and then, okay, and then also, too, let's look at, wait a minute, okay,
you got to go by position when it comes to football, you know?
Oh
okay,
God.
But Tom Brady, man,
you gotta go by
no.
position.
You
got to go by position because obviously Tom Brady can't be a running back, you know? I mean, you got to go by position, you know? Come on.
Yeah, man.
I mean,
there's
different levels.
There's so many options here to fill up between white and black, even better.
Yeah, go by quarterback.
Right now,
who's best quarterback, black or white? Now?
Right.
How about running back? Who's the best running back, black or white?
We got to go by plays and how much range. Come on, man, yardage.
Come on now. We got to do it right.
So many semantics and qualifications right here. Can we just be plain?
You can't do that because, you know, Tom Brady can't be a cornerback. He can't be a receiver, you know. I mean, who's the best receiver? I'll take Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice.
Okay, now Jerry Rice. Okay,
Tom Brady is losing you your imagination like Rocky Marciano. Like fantasy fiction now. You might as well just keep him in your
Why are y'all arguing about hypotheticals?
Okay, well, that's okay.
What's the reality? What's the reality?
Well, they're saying the reality is the blacks are a superior athlete.
They were not selling out like they do us. There was none of that going on.
We didn't have flat screen TVs either. We didn't have flat screen TVs back then. Come on now.
Nah, but you still had television, though.
We had
you still
quality,
had television.
Can I say something?
And all of us will respond. Go ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
You know, listening to this conversation,
RCA had quality TV programs
and
too.
You guys are talking hypotheticals. Everything from each era, and every champion that we've had from each era have been different. They've been playing under different circumstances, different rules, and different everything else. And and your talk about going out and forming a all-black league is regressive. You're going backwards in time, and you guys are falling victim, you're taking it hook, line, and sinker.
You've taken the bait
and you've been hoodwinked.
No.
We have been hoodwinked. Yes, we've been bamboozled. We've been talking about this illusion of inclusion.
Listen. No.
You guys fought for the blacks have fought for a long time to get into professional sports. They have made it into professional sports. There is no doubt in my mind that the black athlete is a very, very good, healthy athlete. Okay? The thing about it is that you've taken the political bait about the separation and the hate and division that the politicians are putting all over us, all over this country, and dividing us. Now, if you guys,
there's a big difference on the treatment and standards. There's all kinds of different things that you're not factoring into. You're just going off your feelings
okay,
right now.
One at a time, please. Okay, now the gentleman here is saying that we took the bait of going with division. Division with what? What are we dividing right here? Okay, I'm going to ask him a specific question. What are we dividing?
Races.
Okay, well we're not racist, sir.
Hold on. He don't even know what racism and white supremacy is. Because he's never experienced. Neither do you.
I know it very well.
You don't have any idea.
I definitely know what it is because I experienced it every day of my life as a black man in America. So yes, I know exactly what it is. The problem is you don't know, but it benefits you. So I'm going to break it down to you.
Exactly.
So it's
on a collective basis.
It's prejudice.
And we argue with Joe with this all the time.
Everybody, you pick and choose what you're going to wear for the day or whatever, right? That's prejudice. Racism and prejudice are not the same thing. They're not synonymous. There's no equivalency there. So with that being said, we don't have institutional power to enforce our prejudice. We can call you a bad C word all day, every day, but we will not dictate where you're going to live, where your kids are going to go to school at, where you're going to work, if you're going to get the loan or not for the house or the business loan. We don't dictate none of that. We have no control over your livelihood, but you have all the control over ours. And when we point it out to you, you say that we're playing reverse racism. We can't be racist.
No, I'm not.
There's a whole equation to the shit.
Right. And we're in no position to enforce any type of systemic racism. Now, let's go on and let this gentleman here talk, you know what I'm saying, because I think I'm going to find this very entertaining. Go ahead, sir, and tell me what a black race is.
You know, everybody gets up in the morning and they put on their pants and their clothes and they have to go out and face the world. Okay.
They pick and choose what they're going to put on for the day, right?
Sarge on board.
I wish Sarge.
Sarge,
we are charging you with AWOL, Sarge. And you violated your general order, Sarge. Yeah, we're charging you with AWOL, Sarge.
Maybe
we're charging you with me.
I may have been AWOL, but now I've returned to the fight and I'm ready to battle.
All right, Sarge, come on.
Hey, let me tell you something. Now, see, I'm listening. Wait a minute now. I'm listening to this back and forth. I'm listening to it all. Great.
Yeah.
And look, all of you are mentioning great athletes. There is a case to be made for all of the people that have been mentioned so far. Me personally, I believe two greatest heavyweight champs in history. Well, I got three. I say probably Muhammad Ali, followed by George Foreman. Simply because, if for no other reason, the incredible comeback after the bit, followed by Jack Dempsey, and fourth maybe Rocky Marciano.
Whoa,
now,
hold on,
hey, Shabaka, hold on, now let me finish. For you to dismiss Marciano when Marciano went to a U.S. Army installation. And they measured his punch on a ballistic pendant. Rocky got a score of 925 foot-pounds while wearing a 12-ounce boxing glove. The people who saw this could hardly believe what they saw. Now, let me explain something to you. Mike Tyson is one of the most astute boxing analysts in history. He is a great boxing analyst. And he says, another undersized champion, like Rocky Marciano was, because they were both undersized, even though Tyson was a bit heavier. And by the way, Tyson copied much of Marciano's style for exactly that reason. He said that Marciano was not necessarily the most graceful fighter or the guy who had the quickest hands. He said what Marciano had gone from, the almost no other heavyweight champion in the history of the sport had gone from, was his conditioning. Marciano could go nonstop from the opening bell to the closing bell, and no one ever saw him flag because he ran out of gas. And that's why he was such a great champion. Now, wait a minute. And you talk about, and look, like I told you, Mike, who I think the greatest boxing champs are, but I'm damn sure not going to dismiss Marciano. And when you're talking about baseball, who in hell is ever going to battle Ted Williams, 334 lifetime batting average, and hitting 400 in two seasons? Nobody will ever break that record.
Okay. Yeah, you're talking about the guy that made the bats after. Okay. Now, but however those
I'm talking about Ted Williams, man, the splendid splinter. You ain't going to find too many people with a better record than that man had. Nobody hit better than that guy.
You have to calm down, Sarge.
And you got to remember, too. Well, Let me include Joe Lewis on the list, too. But let's not forget an approaching over-the-hill fighter named Max Schmeling knocked him out when he was in his prime.
Okay, and you saw what Joe Lewis did in Max Schmeling match, right? Yeah, but Max Schmeling
and Joe Lewis was one of the greats of all time too.
Mm-hmm.
So look, I don't see the need to put no racial dimension on great athletic achievement. They stand independent and of themselves. I refuse to do that. It's one place in society where merit counts is sports.
Okay, but Sarge, the greatest heavyweight boxing champion of all time sacrificed his prime years, Sarge, from the time he was 25 to the time that he was 28, Sarge. He sacrificed his prime years. Ali would have shut down Marciano. He would have shut down Lewis. He probably would have had his hands full with Jack Dempsey, okay? You know what I'm saying? Because old Jack Dempsey, the Manassas Mall, had made a statement that during his time, that when you're hungry, you have a tendency to fight a little bit harder. Because back in his day, they called it prize fighting, meaning that you and another guy in the ring.
Shabaka, Shabaka, I'm not arguing with you about that. Shabaka, you got a point. What you're doing is dismissing Marciano. That's what I will never do. I already told you I think other champions might have been greater. You are dismissing him as somebody who is not to be reckoned with. He was one of the greatest of all times.
Okay, but Sarge, Ali would have shut him down, Sarge. The only thing, like I told you,
I might agree with you, but that's not what you're doing.
Okay, he would have shut him down.
All right, make that argument. Make that argument. But that's not the argument you've been making.
Okay,
Marciano was a bum who only fought bums. Like Ezra Charles was a bum. Are you kidding me? Jersey Joe Walcott? Are you kidding me? Please.
A lot of bums out there.
Calm down,
Mark. Archie Moore? Come on.
Yeah. Marciano fought Archie Moore.
Wasn't a bum.
And keep in mind, Sarge, that Archie Moore dropped Marciano.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
So,
Marciano was relentless.
And he got right back up.
But he got dropped.
Nah, let me ask
he
you
didn't have a count.
Sarge.
I don't even think he went to a count more than three.
Okay, but hold on though, Sarge. Now, how about this dream match for you, Sarge? Jack Johnson and Rocky Marciano.
And by the way, y'all glad you mentioned that. Because remember, Jim Jeffries came out of retirement to fight Jack Johnson. You're dismissing Marciano because he fought over the hill guys. Well, I got news for you. Jim Jeffries came out of retirement to fight Jack Johnson.
And look what happened to Jim Jeffries. Hold on, Sarge. Glad you say that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, man. You're the one saying if you're over the hill, it don't count.
Okay,
that's what
but
you
every
said.
Time I go through Reno, Nevada, Sarge, every time I go through Reno, Nevada, I sit there, Sarge, I look at
see
the great
I mean?
Desert, and I
see
sit there
I mean?
And I listen to the wind.
Now you're disavowing what you just
wind.
Said moments ago.
Okay,
you just said moments ago.
About,
the over
okay,
the hill,
Sarge,
it don't count.
Sarge. Okay, but there was a guy named Jack London that came up with the phrase called the Great White Hope. They got a square named after him in Oakland, California. And Jack Johnson, went up there, and the fight originally, Sarge, you know, give you a history lesson. The fight originally between Jack Johnson and James J. Jeffries was supposed to happen July 4th, 1910 in San Francisco, California. The promoter, Tex Rickard, had been informed by the California Attorney General as that boxing was banned in the state of California. So what old Tex Rickard did, he bum-rushed up an Interstate 80 man going through Placerville County, crossing the Great Sierra, and he went to Carson City, Nevada, and he met with the governor. He met with the governor of Nevada, who was Governor Denver, by the way, and he says, "Governor, I have to bring this fight right here because they shut me down in California, and I got 3.5 weeks before the venue, you know, comes. So I'm going to lose my shirt." You know what the governor of Nevada told Tex Rickard, the promoter? He says, "Man, you're welcome to bring the fight right here. In fact, I will have the city of Reno build the stadium." Okay? And so therefore, so everybody, all these white folks, man, come from all over the world to go to Reno, Nevada. You know what I'm saying, out there, because each time I go to Reno, Sarge, I sit there and I listen to the wind and hear the story of long ago of all of them bum-rushing Reno, Nevada. And they told Big Jim J. Jeffries, "You got to come put this nigga in his place." And right here, Jack Johnson beat the
nigga. See, and what I mean about you, bitch, Chewbacca, look at what you're doing. You're bringing up racial grievances, which admittedly are true. But you're not evaluating the athletes on their objective merit. This is what I'm complaining about. I'm not complaining about the fact that you're historically accurate about it. You're not evaluating the athletes for their merit as athletes.
So Ron Rex, you know who was the greatest.
Okay, besides.
I mean, that's another story. We're talking about who was the greatest. Who was objectively the greatest athlete?
The greatest heavyweight champion of all time, Sarge, was Muhammad Ali.
Period.
He was a heavyweight
with the speed of
a lightweight.
But I agree with you, but I'm not going to dismiss Rocky Marciano. There's a case to be made that he was the greatest, too.
Okay, oh, but that's just it, though, Sarge.
Like, you always
have
to be on the offensive,
it's too bad that Ali and Marciano, okay, too bad that Ali and Marciano did not fight is because when Marciano made those derogatory comments about Mr. Ali refusing the draft, he said that Ali was a disgrace and this, that, there, the other. He disrespected the color, the country and all that, and I really wish that Ali would have went there and beat the living dog shit out of him.
See, you're doing it again. You're not evaluating the athletes for their merits as athletes. You're bringing in a history of racial grievance, which is another story. That's
that's a common debate, man. We're in the common debate stage, Sarge.
That called in on Joe's Ron Rec, he said, you know, it's the race. And I asked him, so when you say in race, are you speaking competition? Because when you think of a race, you think of a competition.
Right.
So he said the word a race, but he wouldn't elaborate what he meant by race.
Okay.
Of course
and
not.
Then I talk about a race. I talk about a race. I'll talk about the 2024 Olympics coming up in Paris, France. There's a young woman in women's track that is bad, 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 Sha'Carri Richardson. She can race.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look at Florence Griffin joining the 1988 Olympics.
All right. Well, look.
So imagine running that race.
Well, look, I'm not going to dismiss anybody that can hit the 925 foot-pound. That's harder than a 45 ACP bullet hit.
Sorry, I don't understand why you have to get so hyped.
Okay,
he was an undersized heavyweight.
You just show up to work whenever you want to. You side with the white man. It's like you like Trump. I mean, come
see
on.
See what I mean? Now you got to change the subject. She changed the subject on us.
Can you show up on time? Can you show up to your job, Debbie? Joe, what do you care what you got to
You know
say?
I got you on the ropes? You're looking for the ropes to give you a break. You try to give me back the neutral coin, and you ain't falling down yet. It ain't going to work. I got you on the ropes.
I'm about
to
put you on the ropes, Sarge. The only thing holding
you
up,
Sarge, is
putting
you
on the ropes, popping you with the quick rag coming man with the left
claw. Nah, okay.
Man. Nah, that ain't the way it works. No, sir. I got you. As soon as the ropes get out the way, you're going to hit the deck. I'm going to go to the neutral corner, and you're going to be counted out.
The fact of the matter is, it was a great thing that Jack Johnson shut down James J. Jeffries, okay, because James J. Jeffries, he used to like to drink, okay, you see what I'm saying, and he listened to these bums by the name of James J. Corbett. Other one, Bob Simmons, okay, who went to Burbank, California, and Jeffries had retired on a farm, and they says, well, you know, Big Jim, you got to come out of retirement, man, to put this boy Jack Johnson in his place. And Jack Johnson used to sit up there, man, and beat these white hopes.
He was
man,
over the hill.
Sit there and smile.
He was over the hill, like you just said.
Right.
Okay. Now I'm saying you're going to disregard the fact that he's over the hill.
Either
okay,
way.
Sarge, the point is that I'm making, Sarge, if James J.
Muhammad
Jeffries was over the hill, then why did he sit
make
up there, man, and let them sucker him into that fight? I mean, you know, Jack Johnson straight trashed him, and Jack Johnson smiled when he did it. You know what I'm saying?
That guy was a villain.
Oh, man, look, we don't need to talk about things we agree about. I agree with you about all of that. I'm simply saying what you are not doing is making an argument for the objective merits of the athletes under discussion. You're making an argument for racial grievances.
Okay, Sarge, it sells tickets, Sarge, just like Ali, he said off in his autobiography.
Right.
That's how he made his money. Ali said the reason why he went up there and did all that trash talking because the people paid to see him lose. Now, read Ali's autobiography about Miss Velvet Green, you know, the white woman who used to wear the green dress all the time that showed up at his fights all the time, and then Ali signed her autograph, and he says, thanks for coming, man. And what did Miss Velvet Green tell Ali? She told Ali, and this is verbatim, and the source of this here, Sarge, is Ali's autobiography, The Greatest My Own Story, written by him.
And Miss Velvet Green said to him, she says, "Oh, Ali, I come to all your fights." And he says, "Thank you, ma'am," because Bondini had said, you know, there's Miss Velvet Green again. And Bondini was the one who used to yell from his corner, "Work with him, Junior," as he put the work in. And she says, "I want to be there when they bash in your face. I want to be there when you get dumped. You consider it N-G-G-E-R." And said it vehemently, venomously, and said how she honestly felt.
But she liked
so
to go there.
So Ali would go on and continue.
Sounds like a lot of confusion.
To put the work in is because Muhammad Ali was the most hated heavyweight champion in the United States of America. But around the world, he was loved. But white America hated Ali, Sarge. They hated Ali with a passion. Why?
Yep.
Because he said, you know, "I ain't got no quarrel with the Viet Cong. They ain't never hung our men folk and raped our women and killed our babies."
Right.
That's what Ali said.
Okay.
And then get this here, Sarge.
To you that part of that enmity directed against Muhammad Ali might not have helped to make him an even better fighter than he might otherwise have been.
Okay, well, he said something in his autobiography, Sarge, is that Ali said, he stated in his autobiography, and his quote is,
he said, was the ire directed against him. He said it.
Sarge.
Oh, man.
Going into overtime, everybody. 657-383-0616. Don't hang up. Don't hang up, anybody, because if you get hung up, you won't be able to get back in. I'm going into overtime.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
But I am saying that Muhammad Ali himself said that the ire directed against him was one of the things that motivated him to fight better.
I'm not touching these smart shows.
Let's look at Joe Lewis. Hold on. Let's look at Joe Lewis, the Brown Bomber, right? Okay. Joe Lewis goes over there.
He was admired.
World War II. Okay, hold it. Joe Lewis made a donation to the United States Navy, right? And what did they do to Joe Lewis? They hit him with IRS back taxes. You see what I'm saying? They hit him with
yeah.
tax evasion, right?
Like
now,
hit,
how did Joe Lewis wind
that,
up? How did Joe Lewis spend his final years, Sarge? He spent his final years out here in Las Vegas being a doorman for Caesar's Palace.
They did play mad dirty when they did that shit.
Yeah. I might also remind you that Max Mailing came along and helped him out. You might want to add that to
No, Sarge, you got
then
it.
Then Max Mailing became very good friends, and Max Mailing
right,
was
Sarge.
The main
Don't tell me that happened.
Don't
okay,
tell me that, because I'm going to tell you exactly how it happened.
Okay, Sarge, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you, Sarge. What happened is with Max Schmeling, when Joe Lewis beat him, he went back to Germany. Hitler kicked him out of Germany, took all his money, took all the money from his wife, who was an actress in Germany. Max Schmeling wound up going over there on the south side of Chicago seeking out Joe Lewis. So on the south side of Chicago, two black guys step up to Max Schmeling, "Hey, man, what you doing in this hood?" Joe Lewis comes out the restaurant and said, "Hey, leave that man alone. That man can fight. That there is Max Schmeling." And Max Schmeling goes to Joe Lewis, and Joe Lewis helped out Max Schmeling, Sarge. Now tell me I'm lying. Am I correct in that, Sarge?
They were mutually assisting each other for the rest of their lives.
It's a fact.
Let me go get
my history.
It was mutual.
Right,
like you said, they were friends.
Okay, hold on.
I mean,
when Lewis
was on hard times, he helped him out financially. He paid for his funeral, and he was a pallbearer at his funeral.
Okay, Sarge. Now, that day was the most saddest thing to ever happen, because that was in 1981 when Joe Lewis passed away at the age of 66 years old. It was the day after of a world heavyweight fight. Okay, in Vegas, Sarge. Okay, hold on, Sarge. Let me get here. History of boxing. Let me see right here. We got the Brown Bomber right here. Joe Lewis, the Brown Bomber, held the heavyweight championship title from 37 to 49, the longest streak in boxing history. Outstanding, outdistancing even the great John L. Sullivan, who held the title from 1882 to 1892, and the renowned Jack Dempsey, who held the crown from 1919 to 1926. Okay, hold on, and let me go up here to this.
We are in overtime, everybody.
Okay, all righty, don't hang up. Okay, let's see here. Schmeling, Schmeling, Schmeling. Okay, don't hang up. Okay,
let him know where all the time she rocking. Let him know. No.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Don't hang nobody up. Okay. So we in overtime.
Oh, that's gotta be Joe Gibson's weird shit.
Okay. Yeah. With his sound effects, I'm looking. I'm looking.
Thanks,
here.
Joe.
And
appreciate
boxing
that.
History here.
You're welcome.
Schmelly. S-C-H. Wait, how do you spell smell? Schmelling?
M-E-L-I-N-G.
I don't know, but that's a horrible last name.
M-E-L-I-N-G.
Okay, wait a minute, because I can't find them here in the index, Sarge. I see Simpson, Salazar.
S-C-H-M-E-L-I-N-G.
I found it, Sarge, 115 through 122.
Just
okay.
Spell it like shit.
Okay, hold it, 115. Okay, going down here, 115, 115. Okay, 115.
Okay,
okay, wait a minute.
We got to go.
Yeah, we
got to
go.
End.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't understand why Jesse's canceling Chewbacca's show. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Okay,
he's in the studio.
Well,
we're running out of time?
Okay. All right, let's see right here. Okay, for months, Joel, okay. Yeah, they got Max. Okay, they're talking about the rematch.
Chewbacca.
Yeah.
We got to cut the show short because Jesse has the leadership course to do right now on the computer.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so we thank everybody
for calling
in. Yeah,
yeah. Hey, we'll be back Friday. Calm down. Calm down, Bert. Keep your picture at work.
We'll be back with Grant.
Bye-bye, Shay. Bye-bye.
Okay, Sarge, we'll argue on Friday.
Bye, Sarge. Show up to work on Friday.
Okay, all right.
Oh,
so
man.
This episode right here. Okay.